Stay tuned for one of the most unusual and fascinating hours you'll ever hear. The subject is UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum, a one-hour program dedicated to a very strange phenomena, unidentified flying objects. Whether or not you believe UFOs exist, the controversy is real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of UFOs. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss one of the most fascinating and strange subjects in the world. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And good evening. As this program continues to grow across the country, we'd like to welcome listeners to our newest station, KCNR Super Talk 1320 in Salt Lake City, Utah. Every Sunday we'll be here at this time to take a good hard look at the UFO phenomena. And we welcome your phone calls at 1-800-UFO-2009. That's 1-800-836-2009. Before we go on to our guest tonight, we've got a very interesting guest tonight to talk about a case that occurred in 1973 involving a helicopter. And before we get to that, I want to make a plea or an all-points bulletin, if you will, for people out there in our audience that have seen fireballs. I'm going to read an article from Friday, September 30th, 1994, from a Denver newspaper here regarding a meteor that was spotted. And I'm going to read the article here. It says, that blue-greenish streak in the sky seen by people along the northern front range of Colorado likely was a meteor, a spokesman for the North American Aero Defense Command said yesterday, September 30th. We've looked everywhere, all of our sensors, said Major Nelson McCouch, a NORAD spokesman. It was more than likely a meteor, but we don't track meteors. We track satellites. I'm not surprised we didn't see it. I am, quite frankly, that they didn't see it. Colonel Bob Morris said he received calls from several people, mostly from media, who saw a bluish-green streak in the sky at about 6 a.m. Wednesday. What makes that so interesting, I've seen in the article, we got a call from a witness who observed something, I think it was the night before. We're going to flesh this out and give you a report probably next week. But I'm very particularly interested because I've seen an increase in reports of fireballs around the country on the computer network. So if anyone out there has any information about fireballs, I'd appreciate a call from them tonight at 1-800-836-2009, or you can contact us off the air at 303-429-2654. Okay, also I want to make available to our audience a new service that Paranet is offering. It is a files catalog, and what I mean by that is we have these text files on the computer network that are available to people. And we have these files now cataloged. There's thousands of them. They're complete information about a particular thing. They're actually very complete. Some of them are discussions. Some of them are articles that were written by people on the net. But this catalog is available to you now for a $5 check made out to Paranet and mailed to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado 80034-0172. And listen later in the hour for that address. But this catalog makes these files available to people who do not have computers. And you'll get a $3 credit with your first order against the $5 you send in. So we'll send this catalog to you as we receive your order. Next thing I want to talk about is a new book out that was published by the Center for UFO Studies in Chicago, Illinois. We're going to talk about this in a future edition of this program. It was written by Walter Webb, and it's called The Encounter at Buff Ledge, a UFO Case History. And the reason I'm bringing this is another case that goes back in time. And if you're wondering why we're doing this, I have been working on extracting, if you will, cases that have been personally interesting to me. And some of the older ones fascinate me because the data on them is so much more pure and has a lot more information to offer. This Buff Ledge case comes on the heels of a famous case that occurred in 1961 in New Hampshire, Betty and Barney Hill case, the one that probably most people are aware of. There was a movie that was spawned off of that called The UFO Incident, which, by the way, was aired on TNT a couple of weeks ago when they did the Larry King Live special. But what's interesting is that this case occurred in 1968, a few hundred miles from the original Hill abduction case. And what makes it so interesting is it involves multiple witnesses. And this is a story about a camp, a predominantly girls' camp, where a young man, a 16-year-old young man, and a swimming instructor, a 19-year-old girl, were spending some time together on a dock in this little Vermont area, and observed a UFO that came up and ejected three smaller ones from it, and ultimately came along and took them aboard and performed the typical abduction examination. What makes this interesting is that several days after this, the witnesses went their own ways and resumed their own lives. And 10 years later, the male, troubled by this this event, contacted Walter Webb, and they went out and located the girl. And she had not seen this boy in 10 years. And as the case unfolded, they discovered that the two witnesses' stories were very, very similar. So it's a very interesting case, and we're going to bring Walter Webb on to talk about this in, like I said, a future edition of the program. If you're interested in getting this book, you can write to the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies, 2457 West Peterson, Chicago, Illinois, 60659, and it's $19.95, and I think there's some shipping and handling in there, too. But like I said, it's a very, very good book. It's very detailed. I'm almost done reading it. It's about 300 pages of this investigation that Webb conducted, and by the way, Webb was the primary investigator in the Betty and Barney Hill case, so it does offer a very good amount of reliable information. Okay, my guest tonight is the primary investigator for a case that occurred over Mansfield, Ohio, in 1973. It's the famous helicopter UFO encounter involving Lieutenant Colonel now Coyne, and this is a very interesting case in that the helicopter was approached by an object that literally elevated it. A green light came out of it, came on this helicopter, and the helicopter was in a dive, and despite the controls that Captain Coyne was working, the helicopter seemed to go up in elevation. This is a very interesting case. There's some unusual things that we'll talk about with it tonight, and my guest will be Jenny Zeidman, who will talk about this. She is affiliated with the Center for UFO Studies, and she was the primary investigator on this. And there is also a publication on this one as well that can be received from the Center for UFO Studies. So when we come back from break, we'll get on with it, and we'll get down to finding out what happened in 1973. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. We'll be right back.
Paranet Information Services is your electronic window on the world of UFOs, accessible by computer and modem. Paranet keeps you up to date on the world pulse of ufology, with sighting reports, interesting findings, and general discussion on the mysterious UFO enigma. Paranet features one of the most comprehensive text file libraries in the world on the paranormal, available for a small online fee. So plug into power and knowledge through Paranet. The VBS number is available 24 hours a day. Call the data line at area 303-429-2713. That's 303-429-2713. Or for more information, contact Paranet Information Services at area 303-429-2654. That's 303-429-2654.
Pilots, when you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These are free, pocket-sized guides giving you information about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio frequencies, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport, and local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours free. Ask the fixed base operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides, or call area 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at area 303-669-1800.
You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet UFO Continuum, and it deals with one of the most fascinating subjects around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
To give us a call tonight, call at 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-UFO-2009. We want to hear from you out there. If you have any information about fireballs that have been seen over the United States or elsewhere, you know, in the recent times, I've seen a whole lot of them come across the net lately. Okay, let's move on to our case that we're going to talk about tonight. October the 18th, 1973, at approximately 11 p.m., a helicopter of the U.S. Army Reserve was en route from Columbus, Ohio to Cleveland, Ohio. 7 miles east-southeast of the Mansfield, Ohio airport, at an estimated altitude of 700 feet above ground, the crew encountered an unidentified lighted object. Analysis of the witness testimony indicates an uninterrupted observational time of approximately 300 seconds. During that time, radio communications were interrupted, instrument and control irregularities were noted, and the aircraft experienced a climb of approximately 1,800 feet, for which the pilot disclaims responsibility. I read that just now from this book published by Jenny Zeidman in the Center for UFO Studies, A Helicopter UFO Encounter Over Ohio. My guest tonight is the primary investigator, Jenny Zeidman, and she has been involved with the Center for UFO Studies for a number of years, and I'm proud to have her on the program. Good evening, Jenny.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Very good, thank you, and thank you for being on the program this evening. This case, for our listeners, I wanted to make note of the fact, the reason that it's so interesting to me is, in any UFO report, the most... The thing that brings it the most credibility are multiple witnesses, which this case has plenty of witnesses. And number two, it's reported by a military or civilian pilot. So that's one of the reasons that I feel that this case is so very important. But Jenny, set up for us the scene in 1973 and tell us what happened.
Well, Michael, as you said, as you were reading from the preface or the abstract of my report, the Army Reserve helicopter, it was a UH-1, a Huey, and I'm sure many of the listeners immediately have a picture in mind of the Huey helicopter and probably the way it sounds, very distinctive, chopping, clattering, very noisy sound. The helicopter was en route from Columbus to Cleveland. They were returning to their base, which was at the Cleveland airport. And it was about a few minutes past 11 o'clock at night, a bright, starry, clear, beautiful night, that they were passing Mansfield, Ohio, just about halfway between Columbus and Cleveland. And one of the crew members spotted a bright light off to the east, a bright red light. He thought at first, well, maybe this is another aircraft, and he was seeing the port wing of the other aircraft, of another aircraft. Then he thought, well, no, it's not that, and it's not a radio tower because it's moving along with us. It was paralleling them. He brought it to the pilot's attention. And all of this first segment of the observation took probably something on the order of a minute. The pilot said, well, keep an eye on it. And then a couple minutes later, the crew member said, this thing has turned toward us and is closing toward us. The pilot took the controls from the co-pilot who had been flying from the left-hand seat and put the helicopter into a shallow dive. And at this point, he also was watching this red light approaching. And he also called the Mansfield approach control, asking if there was any traffic in the area. There were some jets of the National Guard located at Mansfield Airport, and he thought that this might be local traffic. Well, at that point, the radios malfunctioned. He changed channels several times and was unable to reach Mansfield. All this while, the red light was approaching the helicopter. At this point, the pilot increased his rate of descent, and everybody, to say the least, was getting quite worried. They thought that a collision was imminent. When the object got right in front of the helicopter, right up, slightly above and in front of the helicopter, it stopped. Now, when I say stopped, what I'm saying is that it hovered over the helicopter. The helicopter was still proceeding on its course to Cleveland, but the object, which had approached rapidly from the east, now was directly over, almost directly over the helicopter, and it maintained that position and moved forward with the helicopter as the helicopter was moving forward.
So this thing came at the helicopter at a rapid rate of speed.
Exactly.
And then it suddenly decelerated and began hovering and pacing the helicopter.
Exactly. And at that point, they all saw that it was a hard-edged, solid-appearing object with a red light at the nose, a white light underneath it, the white light was at the rear, but underneath was a very bright green spotlight contraption or whatever, which was rotating and swiveled, apparently was rotating, and came into their helicopter cockpit and lit up the cockpit in this incredible shade of bright green.
Now this light, the green light,
mm-hmm.
It was reported to have some strange characteristics, did it not?
Well, the strange characteristic was that it was so bright. And are you referring to a kind of a ray coming down or something?
Well, as I recall from reading this report, the
yeah.
light was conical in shape. And they described it as having an unusual property to it, like it had shape and substance, possibly.
I don't recall that was the case. They were certainly extremely impressed by this green light, by the color of it, and by the intensity of it, and the fact that as it maneuvered around, as if by intelligent control and came into the cockpit of the helicopter, as the pilot said, everything lit up green.
Okay. Now, COIN has the collector, which is the stick forward, I guess,
mm-hmm.
trying to put the helicopter into a dive.
Right.
And what happens next?
What happens next is that they're all looking up at the helicopter, and COIN is trying to see what is going on, trying to avoid a collision, but at the same time as the helicopter commander, he is getting very worried that he's getting very close to the ground. So everything was going on at once. You've got to,
sure.
to realize the confusion that was
right,
going on.
I can
on
understand
this.
That, sure.
The object then began to move off to the west, and COIN immediately began thinking, pulling up he was going to pull up on the collective, and he looked at his altimeter and found that he had gained considerable altitude. He wasn't anywhere near the ground. He was a lot higher than he thought, and then he realized that his controls were still fixed for being in a dive. He had to do some maneuvering of the controls to bring the helicopter back under his control so that he had confidence that he actually did have once again control of the helicopter. But what had actually happened was he thought he was in a dive. He thought he was very close to the ground. He thought that he might actually crash into the ground as he maneuvered to avoid this object.
Mm-hmm.
But as the object moved away and he realized that the danger of collision was past, the altimeter said he was at 3,800 feet.
Very interesting.
So the question is, was there a malfunction of some kind of the helicopter controls, or, as some people have proposed, did the object pull the helicopter up?
Okay, we're going to.
And I'm not proposing this myself as a theory. I simply don't know. I'm reporting what happened.
Sure.
and what the crew reported.
Okay, we're going to go to break, and when we get back, we're going to hear about stories from the ground. There was apparently a family of people that observed this. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. My guest is Jenny Zeidman. She's an investigator of the Center for UFO Studies, and we're talking about the Coyne helicopter case in 1973. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name. With America Online's Usenet newsgroup tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet newsgroups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet. A winning combination.
October 1987. A child is lost in a well. No country comes to the aid of a child the way we do. Yet today many children are lost. Lost in an education system unable to prepare them for a competitive world. Imagine if the effort that saved that child went into keeping the promise that every child gets the best education. Call 1-800-96-PROMISE for information on changing the schools in your community. A message from the Education Excellence Partnership and the Ad Council.
Well, I was a little nervous first time I went into an elementary school classroom as a junior achievement volunteer. But when I saw how eager the kids were, I knew it was going to be all right. They're so thrilled you're there.
If you've ever wondered what you can do to help kids expand their horizons, find out about our new elementary school volunteer program. Call 1-800-THE-NEW-JA. That's 1-800-THE-NEW-JA. A public service message brought to you by Junior Achievement and the Ad Council.
This is the Paranet UFO Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network dealing with the UFO phenomena, call us at area 303-429-2654 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And my guest tonight is Jenny Zeidman, who is a research associate of the Center for UFO Studies in Evanston, or in Chicago, Illinois. Jenny's background, now, she's got a biography here in the book. Apparently, she's been investigating the UFO phenomena since 1953. She was a research assistant in the Department of Astronomy at Ohio State University. She also worked with Dr. J. Allen Hynek and was technical assistant in his early years as Project Blue Book consultant. Since then, she has investigated many UFO sightings, including those of Lumberton, North Carolina area in 1975. She has a background in aviation and astronomy, and she seems to have quite a knowledge of the phenomena, scientific knowledge, which I appreciate because, just as you heard before the last break, she is not speculating as to whether the helicopter actually did elevate 1,800 feet while the captain had it in a dive, or whether or not there might have been some kind of a malfunction in the equipment. But welcome back, Jenny.
Thank you.
Now, this with this incident, now the object is now moving away from the helicopter. They continue on to what is it, to the, is it Mansfield Airport?
No, they continued to Cleveland.
Okay, to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Okay. What happened when they arrived at Cleveland?
Well, they were pretty shook up. The helicopter commander, Captain Coyne, did report the incident to the Cleveland FAA people. But as you know, Michael, a lot of times people have UFO experiences and they simply don't know where to report it.
Sure.
And a lot of good data are lost this way.
Now, as I understand it, when they got back to the airport and they landed, the compass was malfunctioning, wasn't it?
Yes. That was one of the technical difficulties that they had. As they approached Mansfield and were trying to reach the Mansfield control tower or approach control, their radios malfunctioned. After they had passed Mansfield, after the object had gone off and disappeared to the west, the radios again began functioning properly. So they, here's already are two things that technically went wrong with the helicopter. The radios malfunctioned, and the unexplained climb. On top of that, as the object disappeared over the western horizon, Coyne noticed that the one of the compasses was rotating. It was just not working properly. They never could figure out what was wrong with this, with the compass, and it was removed. And unfortunately, we do not have. They didn't keep the compass, so we, you know, couldn't be investigated as to what was actually going.
Now they also replaced a second compass too, didn't they? Right after they put the next one in.
I believe so. It was a magnetic compass. The RMI, the radio magnetic indicator, remained apparently unaffected, but it was, it just kept going round and round in circles. So, so this was quite a concern of theirs also.
Were you able to ever get any kind of corroboration from, I take it was the Army that would have replaced the compass? Was there any way to get any kind of corroboration to find out what?
Well, unfortunately not. I asked for the aircraft log to see if there was any mention of replacing the instrument, and there was some business going on about the logs are only kept for a certain length of time. And
so you got kind of a runaround.
I'm not quite sure whether it was a runaround or not. It certainly was not a runaround from Coyne. The documentation that the radio or that the magnetic compass was replaced just doesn't exist.
Okay.
And believe me, I asked for it.
Now, Dr. Hynek was involved in this as well, wasn't he?
Yes, certainly. He was the first person to interview the crew, and it was not until some time later that he asked me to continue and to essentially reopen and intensify the investigation. Can I tell a little story about that?
Sure.
I think one of the reasons that we did go further with this investigation was because there had been a so-called investigator who kept insisting that this must have been a meteor. And so Hynek said to me, "I don't think this was a meteor. It seems to have lasted much too long to have been a meteor, but we need to find out, do a definitive investigation and find out just what was going on here. If it was a meteor, we'll publish that we think it was a meteor. If it wasn't a meteor, we'll publish that." So if it hadn't been for the noise being made about whether or not the thing was a meteor or trying to just pass the whole thing off as a meteor, I probably would not have been assigned to the case and would not have gone forward with it.
Okay. Now, was there anything else that was unusual about the helicopter when it returned to the base? Beside the compass and the radio malfunctioning, was
you must know something that I don't, or must have remembered something that I don't.
What? No, I'm not particularly. I'm just wondering if there was anything.
Not that I know of. The highlights of this case really involve that we're now actually next week approaching 21 years after the event, and the case has maintained its credibility and its interest over all that time.
Okay. Now, there was a family on the ground.
Right.
How did they come about contacting you?
Well, here again, it was the persistence of UFO investigators that were able to make the breakthrough. There's a group of technically oriented people in Columbus, headed by a man named Warren Nicholson, and they were interested in this case, and it occurred to them that if this all took place as reported by the helicopter crew and with the green light as intense as it was, that perhaps someone on the ground must have seen something. And they
okay, we're going to stop there, Jim. We've got to go to a break.
Okay.
We'll get that that part coming back from the commercial. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. Give us a call. My guest is Jenny Zeidman. We're talking about a helicopter case that occurred in 1973 involving some unusual characteristics. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
An increase in immigration to the United States.
A report issued today states that newly arrived immigrants.
It seems like every day there's another news story about refugees or immigrants. But beyond the headlines, there are things about immigration that you as an employer need to know. People who are already in the United States, who already have a legal right to work in this country, are being discriminated against by employers who don't know the law. Did you know that in almost all cases it is illegal to require U.S. citizenship? And it is also illegal to demand to see specific documents, like a green card, or not accept other papers that can prove a right to work. Take time to learn the law. It's easy, and it can save your business from facing severe penalties. Call the Office of Special Counsel at 1-800-255-8155. 1-800-255-8155. And next time you do any hiring, look at the facts, not at the faces.
You're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, there's a lot about the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned. Keep an open mind. Call in and join the discussion. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And we're back. My guest is Jenny Zeidman, and we're talking about a helicopter case that occurred in 1973. And Jenny, tell us about the witnesses on the ground now.
Yes, Michael. The witnesses on the ground were actually driving in the area. They were driving toward the east, and they saw directly in front of them a big red light, as they described it. And it wasn't flashing, and the light appeared to be in the front of an object. And they began to slow their car. They couldn't figure out what was going on. At first, they thought it might be a light plane, but they rejected that almost immediately. And finally, this light got so close to them and was so bright that they pulled over to the side, and there were several kids in the car, and a couple of them jumped out, and they stopped, and they all looked through windows and so on, and saw what was going on. This was a deserted rural area. At any rate, at this point, when they got out of the car, they realized they were also hearing a helicopter, but that the helicopter was approaching from a different direction. They saw the red light approach the helicopter, and the two objects converging. And then they saw a bright green light suddenly appear from the object and bathe the helicopter in the bright green light. They saw the helicopter continuing on toward Cleveland, continuing its course. And the interesting thing here is that they reported that the object made a zigzag motion. I don't think I can describe this very well over the radio, but we were able to corroborate that the helicopter crew, which saw the object apparently stop in front of them or hover in front of them and then continue on to the ground witnesses, the object was actually stopped in front of the helicopter and looked like it was kind of in a retrograde motion for a short time before it proceeded on to the west. Hard to explain without graphics, but it was a definite corroboration that they did see the event.
Okay, we're going to take a call. We have John on line one from KNRY in California. Good evening, John.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Great program again. I'm wondering what Philip Klass or Carl Sagan would say about this one. But that's
billions
not what
and
my
billions
question
of
is.
Tiny
I was just wondering if the cockpit crew had experienced any changes in their life, either physiological, health.
Michael, I can't hear what John is saying.
Okay, he's asking if the... He's asking if any of the people involved in this had any physiological changes in their lives.
Or psychological.
Or psychological, yes.
Attributed.
Actually, to some degree, Sergeant Healy reported that he had had an out-of-body type of dream, and Captain Coyne himself said that he had an out-of-body type of dream in which a voice seemed to say to him, "The answer is in the circle."
Wasn't there something, too, with spheres or something, light spheres or something?
I'm sorry, Michael, I can't hear you.
Wasn't there something that involved light spheres, too, as well?
Light spheres?
Yeah, like didn't Coyne talk about holding a sphere of light or seeing a sphere of light?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay. Johnny, got another question?
I couldn't hear what she said. The answer is in what?
The answer is in the circle. This was a voice that seemed to come to him and said that.
Yeah. The reason I asked the question is the color green is associated frequently with healing. And I was just wondering, because the whole experience seems to be so meaningless unless there was, you know, some consequences of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Jenny, question on the dreams and stuff that they had. There was some interest. Now, this is probably, for me, one of the most bizarre aspects of the case. In your report on page 115, you talk about a phone call that Coyne received from a person identifying himself as being with the Department of the Army, the Surgeon General's office, and he was investigating alleged metaphysical things and, you know, asked Coyne about these dreams, and apparently Coyne had already had them. Can you comment on that?
Well, I've opened my report to page 115. Thank
uh-huh.
you for giving me the reference.
You're welcome.
Once again, there's no documentation here. This was a phone call, and Coyne did not get this person's name or where to call him back or anything of this nature. I really don't know how to comment on this. Apparently someone was interested. You know, there had been a great deal of publicity in the press about this case. So actually anyone could have called any of the crew members, and they figured out how to get a hold of them, and could have come up with anything.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting that it was a bogus call. I'm saying that it was apparently a one-time event, and we don't really know who called him.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was pretty interesting though that they did have the incidence of the metaphysical content of these reports is interesting because of the fact that there seems to be so much of it, talking about out-of-body experiences
mm-hmm.
and unusual dreams. And I understand from reading this that they did have, two of the crew members did have an unusual, unusual dreams that
yeah,
were associated with it.
Coyne and Healy
mm-hmm.
Apparently also did.
But nobody else in the crew?
Not that I know of, no. And I did ask everybody.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In your travels, Jenny, have you heard... Have you heard any of these similar kind of stories coming out of these? Back in 1973, I'm sure that abductions were not really popular, although, like I said at the beginning of the show, Walter Webb's report on the encounter at Buff Ledge is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any chance that any of this stuff might have happened with the crew of the helicopter?
I've often wondered that, whether regressive hypnosis might reveal that more was going on. I really don't consider this case closed. The only thing I can tell you for certain is that it couldn't possibly have been a meteor. This object was in continuous view for 300 seconds at least, 5 minutes minimum, and the zigzag motion of it certainly was not a characteristic of a meteor. Also, everyone who saw it said it had a hard-edged, solid, precise shape, a submarine shape, a domed shape. A couple of the kids in the car below said it looked like a school bus.
Okay, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the program. 1-800-836-2009 is our number. My guest is Jenny Zeidman. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. We'll be right back.
The Paranet UFO Continuum is pleased to offer a number of exciting products. Cassette tapes of previous shows are available for $8 each, or 2 for $12, or 4 for $20. You can also order Paranet memberships and subscriptions to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly newsletter. Paranet, along with MICAP, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena, is pleased to offer a stunning black t-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, and the Paranet and MICAP logos, along with the beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're helping to keep this program on the air. Call now to place an order or to get more information at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-UFO-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe at 1-800-UFO-6381.
Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name. With America Online's Usenet newsgroup tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet newsgroups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet, a winning combination.
UFOs for real, or are they just fiction? To find out, stay with us for more of the Paranet UFO Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And my guest is Jenny Zeidman. She is an investigator for the Center for UFO Studies. And we're talking about a case that occurred in 1973. A helicopter encountered a UFO with a green beam of light, and the helicopter apparently was elevated 1,800 feet. Jenny, before we went to break, I was asking you about the Pentagon interest. And while I was at break, I looked over the book, and I did find that according to Healy, who is one of the pilots in the one of the persons in the helicopter, his cousin Laura Gallagher, who is a student of Dr. Hynek's, apparently was taking these notes. But Healy did say that Larry had told him that they'd had a series of questions from someone at the Pentagon, and that these questions persisted. I guess this guy called him about two or three times. After that, the quote says, but every now and again the Pentagon, they haven't done it now for the past year, and I'm quoting Healy, I guess, but every 2 months or so they'd call Larry and they'd have a series of questions. Had these certain incidents happened to you, or had you dreamed of them since your incident with the UFO? And please contact the other people in the crew. And then it says, and then Larry would call us up and ask us about these things, and then he would mail it back to the Pentagon. The Pentagon, from the way I gather it, believes us. So apparently, this was more than just a phone call. They were apparently filling out forms and sending them in. So I'm really curious, you know, if there's any way to find out who that was that was involved in that.
I wish I knew, Michael. I'm my information is exactly what you have just said, and I don't know anything more about it than that. None of this is really documentable. And we don't know who was instigating these phone calls,
mm-hmm.
or whether Coyne really was contacted. I, of course, asked Coyne about this, and his answer, I believe, was somewhat different than Healy's. Healy apparently had more contact with this kind of questioning than Coyne did.
Okay.
So this is kind of a dead end right now.
Well, how has it changed the life of Coyne and the others? Have you Have you got any idea?
Well, I really don't want to speak for them. I think that it has changed their lives. I think that you will find that many people who have had a really, you might say, in-depth or intense UFO experiences have had their lives changed
radically
in some ways.
Some ways, sure.
Do I have 30 seconds?
Make it quick. I got to get
off. Paramount TV, shown on Fox TV.
Sightings.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Sightings is going to do the Coyne Mansfield helicopter case, and it's in the cutting room and being edited right now, and they're planning on putting it on the week of November 14th for the fall sweeps.
Okay.
So they think it's going to be a pretty good segment.
Okay, great. Jenny, thank you for being my guest. You were super, and I really want to thank you. I want to applaud you for the highly professional work you do just looking over this case. It was very well put together, and this is what the investigation of UFOs is all about, so thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay, well, take care. We'll talk to you. Bye-bye. Okay, that wraps up the program for this week. I do want to say that the interest by the Pentagon is quite interesting, and hopefully we're going to pursue this and give you some information about it later on in another issue of the program. Until next week, keep your eyes on the skies. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet UFO Continuum. Good night.